Hello everyone, welcome to another edition of the Orthodox Nationalist. This is Matthew Raphael Johnson. I could spend time explaining what a rotten week I've had. It's just one thing after another here. But I'll spare you that. I will say one positive thing. That a few days ago I had an interview for 3 hours with Deanna Spingola. Now, I've read Deanna before. I'm a fan of her stuff. Her book, The Ruling Elite, is first rate. And she really is a pleasure to deal with. We don't have a lot of accomplished intellectuals on our side. And I don't necessarily mean academics, but people who are capable of tremendous high order thought. And I don't usually make a big deal about people. But Deanna really was a breath of fresh air. She's the real deal. And, it was one of the best interviews I've done. I strongly recommend you support her. In the last few years, there's really nothing left as far as nationalism in America. It's just a collection of eccentric personalities. Because without an institution, there's no movement. So with that in mind, we'll be talking about the end of all things, and specifically, who the Antichrist is. It's my personal opinion that the Kabbalistic concept of Adam Kadmon is, in fact, this Antichrist figure. Adam Kadmon is a symbolic representation of the forms. Not only is he the primal man, but he is the new man of the revolutions. You know, the new Soviet man, or the new man the French Revolution was going to create. Saint Simonis, all of this, the concept of the new man, the gold man, from using Renaissance terminology. Taking people from the rule of Saturn to the light of the sun. Personally, I don't believe that the Antichrist will be a single individual. I think that would be too obvious. And I think, you know, one man simply couldn't effectively wield that kind of power. Adam Kadmon, of course, is, by his very definition, the very summation of the virtues of Judaism. Because in Judaism, they collectively are God. Adam Kadmon is the new man of the revolution. This is Antichrist. Remember, there is no God in Judaism. There hasn't been in many, many centuries. They make reference to God. Make reference to the Almighty and things like that. But when you're reading texts of any kind, especially in the mainstream press, you have to ask yourself, are they using these terms the same way we expect them to use them? And much of the time, the answer is no. I have a book coming out, I think maybe next month or the month after, on the Soviet Union and the Barnes Review. And one of the theses there is that the way that the Bolsheviks described themselves was not literally true. Terms like worker or proletarian didn't mean to them what it means in our conversational life. For the Jews, they are collectively divine. I'll go about proving that here in a bit in the book, The Jewish Utopia. I don't claim to be an expert in Kabbalah, although I am extremely knowledgeable in Neoplatonism. I want to make it very clear that Neoplatonism has very little to do with Plato. I just finished Michael Hoffman's excellent book on Rome and usury. And I don't think he makes that claim explicitly, but Plato, that is to say the Athenian writer, is not connected to Neoplatonism. They may borrow some verbiage from him, but it is a magical alchemical set of theories. The Kabbalah is the root. And, of course, the Kabbalah, like everything Jewish, is trendy in powerful circles. It is strictly materialist. People may make reference to spiritual life. That doesn't mean there's any spirit involved. You can't take people at their word. No, the Kabbalah is about states of consciousness. The Soviets took the man of lead, the man of Saturn, a Christian peasant, and would then process him into gold, if that were possible. This is what we're referring to here. There are 10 emanations from something that even Jewish writers can't make sense out of, the Ein Sof, or the Sephiroth, with the Sephiroth. But the Ein Sof, allegedly God, is in fact nothing. It is a flux. Now the 10 emanations from this Ein Sof, which is the core of Judaism, it's a development of form, reality. It's very significant that the first entity is raw power. Kef, Binda, Chesed, Gevura, Tipperet, Nazik, Hed, Yosut, Malkut. Now I can't do the guttural sounds that some of those people can do. But those are the emanations. Raw power leads to slow development of form, that is to say, the essence of something. In other words, essence comes from power, not the other way around. But at Gevura, the fourth part of this, change and destruction come in. This is the role of the warrior. This is the negative aspect of things. And then the balance comes in. But then after that, and only after that, you have the human passions. So you have raw power. It's gradually massaged into some kind of rational form, which then turns back into raw power again. And only then its desire of the human person, by which, of course, is Jew, because only Jews are human in the Jewish system, as I could prove 1,000 times over in the Talmud. It's given some kind of direction. The point where Adam Kadmon appears. And this is, of course, emanations that create these mystical body of Adam Kadmon. Well, if there's a mystical body of Christ, which is a church, there's a mystical body of Satan. And according to the Kabbalah, that is Adam Kadmon. Adam Kadmon is a symbolic manifestation of this. And from that I deduce that it is Antichrist. This is what the ancients were referring to in very vague terms and referred to the Antichrist. Remember, the concept of the individual didn't exist in the ancient world. An individual referred to an office. It referred to a council, a community. The individual is the what came out of the Industrial Revolution and the rule of quantity, But individuals, as these isolated egos, did not exist really until, I would say, really until Descartes. But this development of form starts with raw power, becomes more rational, and then through contradiction, reaction, turns right back into passion again. This passion then is brought to some kind of directed force. This is, of course, a revolution. This is a manifestation of revolution. The power of the anti-Christian movement, slowly beginning to lay out its theory. It's brought out in violence. But the violence initially is not directed, it's simply wild. It has to be directed by the vanguard party. And there, finally, justice can come out of it. And so-called God will have flesh in Adam Kadmon, which is the end result. So it is not, it's not a stretch to say that Antichrist is, in fact, Adam Kadmon. Adam Kadmon is, of course, not literally a person, but it is a mystical body of Judaism, which, of course, is demonism. Satan is a word that gets thrown around quite often. People fear him quite a bit. Those outside of the church are terrified of him. But Orthodox baptism and chrismation gives us power over him. Demons have power only to the extent that God grants them this power. And this power is only in the manipulation of images, as I've said thousands of times on this show. It's not real. Unfortunately, those images have teeth in the form of the state and corporate policy. But he is not to be feared. You can't be possessed by him involuntarily. Satan, of course, comes from the Egyptian god Set, whose name means he who is pleased with destruction. It's associated with the Gevurah, number 4 in the Kabbalah. He is connected with vice, with violence. He's a homosexual. The chimera, his animal form, really doesn't exist in nature. He distorts and disturbs the order of creation. And in so doing, destroys all boundaries. Boundaries being the essences of different objects. Therefore, Set and Adam Kadmon are closely connected. But Set is also the god of the desert. And that means a few things. It means that he not only is the god of the caravan trading routes, which means that he's also the god of mercantilism. He is the god, and therefore usually they're the god of tricksters. It's not an accident that often mercantile gods are also connected with female cosmetics, like Hermes. But the desert also is an ancient symbol of man without God. Hebrew number 1 is God. Number 2 is earth. When you separate those two, you have a desert. But number 3 is Gemel, or the camel, which can get you across the desert. The New World Order uses Egyptian iconography all the time. And in the West, Egyptian mythology is everywhere. It's almost an obsession in certain places. It's hard for people who are new to this to realize that Judaism has nothing to do with the Old Testament. It is an atheistic institution. It's not a religion by any means. A synagogue is not a religious body. These are about political and social mobilization. It's conceivable that strict Haredi rabbis might, you know, believe in some concept of God, but it really doesn't matter anyway, because when Adam Kadmon is born into this world, God is absorbed into him anyway. Ptah. I don't even know how these things are pronounced. They didn't have tape recorders back then. Pagan Ptah is the so-called creator god. Now, there is no creator gods in the ancient world until Yahweh, because there was no concept of zero. You have to have a concept of zero before you have the concept of creation, because it's a creation from nothing. So-called creator gods don't create anything. What they do is they rearrange already existing matter. The whole notion of the Kabbalah is to impose form on the Ein-Sof, so-called God. So in the strictest Jewish mystical writings, and not even mystical because there's no spirit here, God is mere flux. It's the waters of a chaotic sea. Ptah is the first to when he created Atum, he who completes via divine masturbation, and from that creates Thus and Tefnu. And the way that's connected with Set, of course, is that Set is the negation of any kind of order whatsoever. He breaks through the frozen earth. This is a very common metaphor. The notion of ice, freezing, salt, these are very negative things. This is what happens when Set isn't allowed to rule, but through it breaks through a flower, usually a rose, and this rose usually comes from the corpse of something that's been buried, often a lion. Set in the Turin Papyrus says, "My name is Evil Day, no birth giving, no fruit in the trees." And that's literal. But because he's a homosexual, the god of mercantilism and therefore usury, he's a god of that which doesn't give birth. In other words, he's a very good American. I've mentioned before that the Temple of Set is, which came from the Church of Satan. And you realize that any Satanist who uses the word Satan is ridiculous. Satan is a pejorative. They would never use it. Set makes a lot more sense, since they're very closely connected. Satan really does take the form of that god and manifests in him. He manifests in other ways, but Set is one of the most powerful. That's where his name comes from. But the two pillars of the Kabbalah, severity and mercy, are essentially the connection of Horus and Set, their reconciliation. The problem with the ancient myths is that there's so many different versions. These were never meant to be literal people. They're not historical texts. They are, though, encoded cultural texts. The conflict of Horus and Set is one of the central features of this drama. And, of course, it's like all of this stuff, very bizarre. And I always laugh at people who want to make the claim that Christianity came from this stuff. But there's a work preserved, the battle between Horus and Seth. Seth wants to prove his dominance. Chaos wants to prove its dominance over the cosmos by seducing Horus. But somehow Horus places his hands in such a way that he catches his semen and he throws it into the Nile. Because this kind of intercourse was a form of dominance. It wasn't sexual. But because we're dealing with Satan here, homosexual relations can actually be, in their illusion, productive. And the famous theory is that Horus then spreads his own semen on this lettuce. I don't know why it always is lettuce, which is Seth's favorite food. I have not been able to figure out the symbolic connection here. And by ingesting the semen, it proves Horus's dominance over Seth. Now, clearly, Christianity came directly out of that. You know, because they do claim Horus is a type of Christ. And that Isis, his mother, after Set had slashed him into pieces, is somehow a resurrection and therefore is connected with Jesus. I mean, it's so bad, you know, they'll pretty much do anything to discredit Christianity that they'll be this, you know, this bad. But what's the point of all this? These myths, these stories are serious analyses of not just a human condition, but of certain truths in the world of the forms. Just like we saw in Kabbalah, the gradual growth of the revolutionary idea. Set is the revolutionary idea, say, for example, in Russia, prior to 1917. Horus is meant to be order. And order, of course, creates Mott or justice. Order and Mott are, by the way, two different things. Which is odd. But this is what I mean when I say that Set somehow burst through the frozen earth, because in the myths he could actually make something out of a completely unproductive union. He is the patron of homosexuality, and of course he's connected with the Chimera or Baphomet. And this is why he has no boundaries. He's broken down all of these boundaries. Set became extremely important in the world order mentality as a way to overthrow or to make a mockery of the Christian monarchies of the 19th century. And I'm willing to go so far as to say that Satan, or Set Amun, is the spiritual force behind our new world order. Adam Kadmon is the, to use the, you know, the words of Revelation, the second beast. Adam Kadmon is not just the first man, but the last man. He's a perfect world in human form. He is the foundation as well as the result. He's the new man. He's the modern man. He corrects the natural order in that he corrects the Sefer. The 10 Sefer are actually his body. His revolutionary process is his own body. These are 10 faces of God, as the apologists will say. Sometimes it's even referred to as Sephirot or revolutions of light. And he emerges from this. And the central concept here, and one of the reasons that these myths are so important, is that in all Gnostic systems, God, to the extent that he is conceivable to them, left. There was no God. Now you have a God in Plato and Aristotle. He's gone. And in that process, he creates space. And so human beings are left on their own. And slowly, the notion of form and matter in a good sense, not necessarily in a bad sense, and the rebuilding of God, so to speak, God coming back to himself again in a very, very eccentric sense, it's a very conception of modern Jewry. It really doesn't show up until the 2nd century AD, but this is the Kabbalah. The Kabbalah is revolutionary doctrine. That's why Oliver Cromwell was indirectly influenced by it. All revolutionary doctrines are influenced by it. All revolutionary movements talk about raw power being useless when it's not properly guided. Adam Kadmon is the redemption of creation. He brings multiplicity into oneness. His very thought is the essence of things in this system. The notion of magic, or the words spoken by Ptah, where, and this is connected to the Kabbalah as well, that mastering the words of Ptah gives you certain control over the objects that they refer to. Adam Kadmon, of course, contains them all. Tetragabaton, the root is essentially to be. Yush in Hebrew. The letters Yod, He, Wa, and He, the same letter twice. Yod, which has the number 10, which refers to Osiris, the world. It's connected to the arm or the hand, strength. Then He, which is the number 5, connected to Isis, refers to reality, but also justice and happiness. But then Vav, which is number 6, the hook, could also be the mace. Number 6 refers to our world today, which of course in the Jewish mind is terribly disordered because they don't control everything quite yet. And then it goes back to gold. It's also very difficult to connect the two sets of mythology. But the first beast, of course, in Revelation refers to Satan himself, which has one manifestation in Set in Egypt, the most powerful one, the most significant one, which is where we get his name, and God has used that to reveal Satan to us. But as far as the Kabbalah is concerned, the connections are very clear, because both the Babylonian and the Egyptian systems went into the creation of the Kabbalah. Essentially, the Kabbalah derives from the notion that once the Israelites were in exile, God was no longer their protector. They had abandoned God because he couldn't be all-powerful. He couldn't have been all-powerful and let us be in this condition. So they became secular. They turned to magic. They turned to the Babylonian system to put their own Jewish nationalist a stamp on it. And this, you know, to be very simplistic about it, became the Kabbalah. The Sephirot, the Kabbalah, is a revolutionary system. It is modernity. It was a blueprint for the modern world. Whether it be the French Revolution, the Russian Revolution, or the British Revolution. It's the exact same process. It uses terror, it uses bloodshed, it starts with raw power, it rationalizes itself, but then we realize that these rationalizations are nothing more than our passions, or their passions. And these passions, when they're given direction by the party, take on real human form. That human form is Antichrist, or Adam Kadmon, the final end of all of these revolutions, the cumulative end of all of these revolutions. The new man that modernity created, this distorted freak of a being that we call modern man, is represented by the Jewish Messiah, who really is Adam Kadmon. Kadmon, in a sense, is the world ruler. He is the pacification of the earth. He's the first man that, and I don't mean Adam, the actual person Adam, because there is a distinction between his, he's not Adam in the garden, but he is a prototype of his. The significant aspect is, once God leaves, once God, however he's conceived at the time, disappears, once he's abandoned, whether it be by the Jews or the Egyptian elite, once God is gone, Adam Kadmon takes his place. This is the rule of the Titans, not the gods. This is the rule of secular man. This is the rule of Prometheus, of number, which actually is one of the origins of the word Sephiroth. Really comes from the concept of number, the Platonic form in the worst sense of the term. This is not the forms as they exist naturally, as they're found in Christ and Logos. No, these are artificial forms. And I want to make it clear, when we're talking about forms, we're talking about the revolutionary idea of forms. In metaphysics, the form is the essence of something. It's what makes an object what it is. You know, human nature is both free and rational. Therefore, the form of human beings is freedom and rationality, the soul. Now, that's a natural manifestation. Problem there is that we're not talking about nature. We're talking about a group of people who believe that they can create, fix nature, and make it better through technology. And of course, the technological revolution, the industrial revolution, are also revolutions that take the exact same form as the Sephiroth in the Kabbalah, manifesting Adam Kadmon. We refer to him as an actual person. Well, I don't think he's a literal person. His representation, though, of the Jewish claim to be divine. He is representation, in a very real way, of the destruction that revolutionary politics has brought to the world over the last 400 years. So when God leaves, when God is abandoned, what takes its place? Well, it's usually ideology. And this is what Adam Kadmon refers to. The cumulative effect of all these revolutions over time, starting in the Renaissance. When we spoke about the Renaissance in this show before, the Renaissance has nothing to do with the resurrection of Greek and Roman letters. That never abandoned the West, either in the East or the West. What you read about in your textbooks, as always, is completely false. It's the resurrection of magical thinking. They call it Neoplatonism, but Plato would have nothing to do with any of this. Plotinus was a legitimate Neoplatonist, but he was no magician. The Neoplatonic movement I'm talking about is essentially the Judaic Kabbalah manifested in the banking elite, in the Medici, in Italy, and the great thinkers like Pico or Ficino. This is the foundation of our modern world. This is the foundation of modern technocracy, because that too is a revolution. So we're talking about form. We're not talking about the form of different species of animal. We're talking about the form of artificial creations, of how to fix this. You know, the complete abandonment of even the vestiges of what used to be at one time. I mean, there actually was a Protestant culture at one time. I think some of the Lutherans maintain some kind of a culture. But since Christian culture, by definition, is a work, most Protestants could have nothing to do with it. I never considered Anglicans to be Protestants, so that's a different matter. But these are all now servants of the New World Order anyway. But the rise of Buddhism and Hinduism in the West is humorous. Because you know anything that these soccer mom idiots in the yoga studios are going to do has no relationship at all to the ancient world. I probably don't have to tell you that modern yoga has nothing to do with the ancient tradition. In fact, there really isn't much of an ancient tradition that you can call yoga in the sense that you know, you see the women working at Lululemon. Of course, it's a joke. Rafael Kirillin, a Russian archimandrite, writes about this all the time, and he makes fun of the idea of karma. But somehow karma, without explanation, has made itself into one of the most common English words. And it really is a stupid one, because it claims that anything you do will be revisited to you. In other words, that somehow perfect justice is available, which we know is as far as Earth is concerned, is completely ridiculous. The wicked prosper. When you do a good deed, you're usually punished for it. But karma is connected mostly with reincarnation. This is also essential to the Kabbalah and to Judaism in general. But the notion of karma means that evil acts, whatever they mean by that, creates more evil acts. And reincarnation means that when a child is born, it's not really a child in some cases. It could be a very old soul. So innocent suffering isn't really innocent suffering. What it comes down to is that, you know, the karmic system justified the caste system of India. It created a passivity that claimed whatever happens, if it's unjust, it's something that happened from a previous life, and therefore you've earned it. No one tells us, by the way, who's keeping score here, or what good and evil are. But the notion of yoga, of course, is a late 19th century military adaptation. Certain Indian nationalists who are actually, you know, connected more to the British rise of the physical fitness movement in military circles, having absolutely nothing to do with Hinduism. Rafael Kirillin talks about the Hindu system, really based only on three absolutes, that is, creation, preservation, and destruction or change. Destruction isn't in and of itself revolutionary shift. Or Shiva, that's the revolutionary shift is the entire process. But Brahma, in Kirillin's understanding, is a trickster. He's an illusionist, spinning the perception of the world around us, which of course isn't really there. Shiva, the goddess of destruction, this is a liberation from borders, from the things that bind us. Of course, there's no God in any of these systems, Buddhism, nor Hinduism, or religions in any sense. Space and time, these are illusions. Atman is the only true self. But, you know, the yoga is the creation of the self, the so-called I am being you. And that somehow the world around us is a dream. The dream that we only have control over. If we try to get deep into the night of Brahma, which is a being without qualities, which of course isn't a being at all. Gods and goddesses of Hinduism are nothing more than temporary masks of Brahma. I've said this many times about the pagan system. Now, the point of all this, the Jewish system, the Kabbalah, is tightly connected to that of the both the Babylonian and, more importantly, the Egyptian systems. Understanding of Satan. Can derive from the god Set and his role in Egyptian thinking, since he is understood by natural law. And what Set is to the Egyptian system, and Set type of trickster desert deities are to systems everywhere, are what the Kabbalah is to the Western and Eastern European worlds. That's the concept here. This is the source of our ideas of revolution. The esoteric symbols and doctrines of the Kabbalah, allegedly given many millennia ago, which of course is nonsense, and is the very heart of Judaism. Judaism has nothing to do with the Old Testament. Judaism is Kabbalah. It is the Talmud. And those two entities, Talmud and Kabbalah, are not opposed in any way whatsoever. The Jewish elite from Babylon on have been at war with the prophets. In the apocalypse of Isaiah and Ezekiel, which of course derives from Jews being in captivity in Babylon, and they began doing very well there. They had no reason to be worried about the tradition anymore. But at the same time, they became infected with the oligarch's mind. Gog and Magog. Gog is the Egyptian, the alligator, the nihilistic empire, while Magog, of course, itself is a derivative of Babylon. The terms are similar. But these are connected with social justice in the sense that they've rejected not only the law, Deuteronomy and Judges, but also the prophets. And they're referring to the Torah, they're referring to prophets, they're not referring to the Old Testament. They completely reject any idea of social justice. In Ezekiel 8, the temple vision, he is taken up and he's shown the elite of Israelite society worshiping demons. He's worshiping Ashtaroth and Ishtar. Astarte, of course, is the Babylonian goddess of sex, surrounded by her star children. She is beautiful but very dangerous, and also, as is the case with these sexual beings, has a tremendous military background. Even Athena has that connection. Her power, and she's not literally a military person, but the power of her body can be used to destroy whatever she wants. At the time, Israelites began worshiping her as Yahweh's consort. And because of the similarities, the Setian idea and Astarte, just two different civilizations, this is how Set was brought directly into the Kabbalistic system. The whole notion here is pride. Tikkun Olam, the fixing of nature. That God didn't do a good enough job. We want more. The Titans, when God leaves, and Adam Kadmon begins to show himself, the Titans or the oligarchs are created. They demand more out of the natural order than she's willing to give, but that requires sacrifice, as Michael Hoffman has taught us all. This is the core of all the Atlantean pre-deluge alleged systems encoded in the Egyptian and Babylonian myths. I mean, this is the Masonic tradition. The Masonic tradition is that these Atlantean theories have been, and the civilization itself has been encoded into these myths. And there is some truth to that. They didn't come from nowhere. One thing we know for certain is that in fixing the world requires magic power. And that requires force, and that requires violence. This is why the Kabbalah begins with raw power and ends with human passions being given rational form. Not that they're rational or natural or normal, but that they're given a rational form. In all these cases, these demons all are gods of usury. Usury, adultery, idolatry. In the Old Testament, all considered the exact same thing. The Old Testament is the only creation story that is a creation out of nothing. And we know it's true because there was no such concept as nothing available to them at the time. It comes directly from God. All other creation stories were just the rearranging of matter. This is what the demiurge is, demiurgos is. But for Ezekiel, he sees the worship of Set. He sees the slow development of Adam Kadmon. In no way does the Kabbalah accept anything that the Old Testament says. It absolutely rejects it in every way, shape, manner, and form. It's not a religion. It's a revolutionary ideology. Speaking of Adam Kadmon, I want to talk about a book by Michael Higger, 1932, called Jewish Utopia. Now, he was a scholar of the Talmud, and he was part of the Jewish Association of America. He was the editor of several minor Talmudic works, so he was the official voice of Judaism, to some extent, in this country. In Jewish Utopia, he makes reference to the rise of Adam Kadmon, although not by name, but the new world will be created, ruled by the rabbi. There'll be no crime, there'll be no more pain. And he explicitly says that Jews are God. All wealth will be transferred to the rabbis. He makes this very, very clear. He says this right on page 12. That even ships that have been sunk, that have wealth, you know, gold and silver in them, will be raised up and given over to the righteous, that is to say, Israel. That's right on page 13. There'll be a universal state. There'll be a eugenics program where only the righteous will be breeding. That's on page 59. Idol worshippers, which includes me and you, will be wiped out. In fact, entire nations, you see on page 37, will be wiped out. But he does mention that they'll be given a fair trial before their slaughter. And explicitly mentions that those who believe in the Trinity will be wiped out on page 34. Now, absolutely amongst Jews, no dissent is permitted. It is a single, unified body. You know, I've never accepted the protocols as legitimate. If they're too poorly written, they're not done using any of the Jewish texts. But this is better. For those of you who haven't read Michael Higger's work, these are some of the things that raised some alarm bells. Now, this book was suppressed, despite the fact he was a major, scholar in the Association of, the Rabbinical Association of America. So he was their mouthpiece. And yet this book didn't get much press. Michael Collins Piper makes reference to it. But you have a man who's talking about wiping out Gentiles, wiping out those who believe in the Trinity, wiping out idolaters, which of course refers to us, and the transfer of all wealth to the Jews. One of my favorite passages, I think this is on 37. He says, we won't believe in materialism anymore, No one will desire wealth that doesn't belong to them. In other words, Gentiles won't be allowed to take the wealth of their superiors. This book hasn't gotten much press. Jewish Utopia is an official Jewish doctrine by one of the most important scholars, not only in America, but at Hebrew University of Jerusalem. It first came out in 1932. And it is one of the most, it is pure genocide. The protocols aren't real. If these were Judaic leaders, they certainly wouldn't be writing like Machiavelli. They would be making reference to something other than very vulgar, prosaic, exoteric Old Testament passages that were put down by people who don't really know what they are. Not only is it a forgery, it's a bad forgery. And we don't need it, because far superior works like this one says the exact same kind of thing, although using traditional Jewish verbiage. There's no question about its authorship. I've read the protocols many times, and if you know anything about Jewish literature, this wasn't written by those producing Jewish literature. It's not in their style. It's not referencing any of their typical authorities. It's written by a Gentile who knows a little bit, but not the esoteric aspects of Judaism. But Michael Higger wrote this stuff down, and he wasn't supposed to do that, and it hadn't been done again. But this is the nature of the revolutionary idea. I mean, even in Cromwellian England, the Kabbalah was present. The Jewish power was manifest. This is the nature of it. Gods like Shiva the gods of destruction, this isn't some dialectical negation. No, the entire process is revolution. But the clear notion that Antichrist will be Adam Kadmon, in the sense that Jews will rule as a unified group. They'll rule as if they're one man, under the archetype of Adam Kadmon. And in Higger's book, you have the notion that there can be no public dissent among Jews. They won't be so stupid as to write anything so crude as the protocols, or have a single man running things. That would be far too obvious. There were no single men that you could refer to at the time this was written anyway. Even Christ had two natures. We're talking about communities of beings here. The concept is Adam Kadmon is Antichrist. It is the Messiah. It is the blueprint for all revolution. It's a blueprint for the new man. Higger's book suggests only a handful of Gentiles will be allowed to live. And they'll be doing nothing but serving the Jews. And he makes no bones about it. Now, sometimes he uses non-obvious language. He keeps referring to God, unless he's talking specifically about Jews. Then God goes away. Therefore, the Jews must be God. Jews aren't serving God. Jews are God. As far as the Gentiles are concerned, they create this illusion, this myth, that they are so superior and so powerful and so beneficent that no one could possibly oppose them. And Gregory of Nyssa talks about the end and what this will be like. He talks about how to, know what an evil thing is. How to spot the evil when you see it. And the first thing is that it lacks reality. It's an image. It's a fantasy. It's self-interest. It's the notion of people holding a political position from sheer emotion or self-interest. It's fantasy. The second thing is that it's destructive. Demons can't create. Only God can create. Ptah, you know, rearranges existing matter. And allegedly you can memorize these words and control the forms that he imposes on it. The third thing is that it's chaotic. It lacks balance. Fourth, very importantly, because it's unreal, it separates the image of the thing from its essence. It's not what it is. It's misuse of something. And finally, it's pure deception. Notice what all these things have in common. Gregory of Nyssa makes it very clear that at the end, when the Jewish revolution manifests itself entirely, this is how you can tell one from another. The only way the demon can control you is through images, through fantasies. That means you have to check yourself in the sense that what you're believing, what you're arguing, what you're holding, is it really the truth? Or does it come from self-interest? Does it come from fear? Does it come from media images? Does it come from wanting to be popular? Does it come from wanting to avoid trouble? Because anything evil isn't real in the sense that it's a fantasy. It's an illusion. We know fantasies are very real when men practically kill themselves chasing them. The idea here in this talk is that the whole system of the Kabbalah is revolution. Adam Kadmon is the mystic body of this revolution, in an analogous way to Christ being the mystical body of the church. Or the church being the mystical body of Christ, I'm sorry. It's the same relationship. When we refer to Antichrist, we're not referring to a person necessarily, but we're referring to an elite, an enemy, that operates as if they're one person. And it's manifest in the proper name of Adam Kadmon. And this seems to be justified in the work Jewish Utopia from Michael Higger, and has all sorts of influences, not only from Babylon, but also from Egyptian, from the Egyptian system, especially the battle between Horus and Set. Set is the manifestation that of this, it's who Satan is. He's appeared in numerous civilizations. So-called Satanists follow Prometheus, Pythagoras, Set. Belial, they'll never use the word Satan. Satan is just used to get attention. Set is everything that the revolutionaries are. It's everything that Adam Kadmon, everything that the Kabbalah is. It's the dark side of technology. It's technology used to manipulate. It's used to not cooperate with nature, but replace it and change it, and ultimately destroy it. The bottom line is that while a tiny oligarchic elite forced nature to produce far more than it's willing to give, the rest of humanity is held up in sacrifice, because you can't do that to the natural order without a backlash. And they figured out a way that they could privatize profits and externalize and publicize cost. And that's the nature of sacrifice. Human sacrifice is for others. Human sacrifice is what you are forced to do when technology rules your life. You think of the amount of money and time and power that goes into the electric grid or the highway system, or automobiles, or anything like that. All of our technological apparatus, the bodies, the corpses that it's created, the wars that have had to be fought, the trillions of dollars that are spent on it. That's the sacrifice that's required to make it work. Is it worth it? Is being able to drive and our current system worth the millions who have been maimed on the roads, the trillions of dollars a year that has to be spent on upkeep. This is the problem. Revolution is connected with technocracy, with oligarchy, and it has a name. In the system of Jewish Kabbalah, which is a blueprint for revolution, it's Adam Kadmon. Adam Kadmon is the not only is the origin of man, but is the final purpose of man. The Soviets went on and on and on about the new Soviet man that they were creating. And you have to go to camps and have everyone purged. It's no different than what's written in the Jewish Utopia. You don't need ridiculous forgeries like the protocols when you have works like that. But wherever you go, whatever civilization you have the master key now. And that's the nature of revolution. It's what modernity is. There is no modern world that isn't, in fact, revolutionary. The Enlightenment is completely different, completely unknown throughout human civilization. It is completely unique and stands out. And that's because of the presence of the Kabbalistic system, which was manifest in the Renaissance. This is what was so-called reborn from Atlantis to Italy, the Netherlands, England, after the Black Death and the end of the Middle Ages. I know this has been a little bit esoteric, but that's the nature of what we do here. I firmly believe that Antichrist is Adam Kadmon, and that the Jewish elite rule already as Antichrist, as if they're one man. Yet, of course, their control is not completely done. It's not completely thorough yet. There's still room to fight. Lord, have mercy on us.
You've been listening to The Orthodox Nationalist with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson at RadioArian.com.